Good afternoon, Avi Davis. Welcome to Nothing Left on J-Air Jewish Community Radio in Melbourne, Australia.
Very happy to be with you, Michael. Thank you very much for having me.
Avi, you are described as an attorney, journalist, travel journalist, commentator, documentarian, and president of the American Freedom Alliance. What is the American Freedom Alliance?
That's a policy network and think tank based in Los Angeles, which is focused on addressing the threats to the continuity of Western civilization and the defending Western values and ideals, which is an ambiguous statement, I know, but it's an organization that is essentially addressing the rise of Islam in the West, media bias, academic freedom issues. Radical environmentalism and the emergence of a global governance movement around the world.
You say that the four pillars of Western civilization are in danger, namely God, the nuclear family, democracy, and free enterprise. Where is this threat coming from?
Well, it's coming from within it's coming from without, that's for sure, because the Islamic religion of Islam doesn't really respect a lot of the things that doesn't really recognize those things the same way that we do. But it's coming mostly from within our civilization. That is, we have an attempt to deconstruct many of the values and ideals that support the West. And so, for instance, the rise of anti-Semitism, multiculturalism, moral and cultural relativism, appeasement, the emergence of appeasement again, these are things which chip away at those foundations. The whole gay revolution that has been occurring over the last 10 years in this country, in the United States, is what I regard as a great peril to the future of the West on many levels. There are many other things, and your listeners want to go to our website, they can find out more at AmericanFreedomAlliance.org.
So that's the AmericanFreedomAlliance.org, yep.
Yep.
Would you compare the times we're now living in to the 1930s, where it was all about denial and appeasement leading up to the Second World War?
Yes, I do see a great similarity between the two. We ran a conference back in 2008 on the 70th anniversary of the Munich Agreement. We ran a whole series of events, actually, and John Howard, former Australian Prime Minister, received an award, actually, at that conference, the Winston Churchill Award for the work he has done in combating appeasement. Yes, I do see a great similarity. There's an aversion to the use of military force, that there's a sense that diplomacy can resolve all differences between nations. I've seen the Obama administration an unwillingness to grasp the lessons of Munich, which really really have informed all American policy since the 30s. In those mistakes were never repeated, or at least the muscular American policies of the post-war decade, largely due to the lessons of Munich. And I see Barack Obama and his administration basically ignoring those lessons, which is extremely perilous.
Whilst nobody knows if Obama is a Muslim, do you think his speech in Cairo in 2009, grovelling to the Muslim world, has paid off? Has the Muslim world reciprocated his reaching out?
Well, first of all, let me say that I do not believe he is a practicing Muslim. I do believe that he has Muslim and affinities that have really shaped his foreign policy, particularly in the Middle East. And that's largely because he had a Muslim background. He had many friends in academia who were apologists for the Islamic world. So he definitely has an orientation towards Muslim, and he feels that because he straddles both worlds, he can bring the two worlds together. That was the objective of the Cairo speech. Has it succeeded? No, I do not. I think that the failure to recognize the irreconcilable differences between our cultures, the failure to understand, as Samuel Huntington said, that there is a clash of civilizations that cannot be resolved through diplomacy or cultural exchange or interfaith dialogue. They just can't. They are irreconcilably pitted against one another, and that's not an argument for war, but it is a statement that we can't afford to appease it. We have to confront it, and it's the greatest threat to our survival. And unfortunately, we do not have a president here in the United States, or leaders in the Western world who are sufficiently aware of the issue.
Obama has single-handedly destroyed America's reputation as a superpower. What motivates him?
Well, I think that's a bit of a categorical statement. I don't think it's entirely true. I think that the United States still is the leading superpower in the world, or the lone superpower in the world, if you like. I think he's diminished respect around the world for that superpower and for its muscle and its power. If you've read Bret Stephens' book, recent book, the Pulitzer Prize winner, the name escapes me right now, America, gosh, I can't remember the name of it.
Yes, Bret writes about Stephens.
Well, Bret writes pretty convincingly that the United States has to have a muscular foreign policy and has to be involved and engaged in theaters of conflict around the world, because it is effectively the world's policeman. That's the role that was thrust upon it in the post-World War, post-Cold War, actually. Retreating from that, American Retreat, that's Bret's book, retreating from that responsibility and for that role not only endangers America, it endangers the rest of the world, and it's a very delicate balance. You know, we could slip into barbarism any moment, and as we see happening across the Middle East, and you know, to think that, you know, ISIS cannot be in the United States or even in Australia is foolish. They're already in both Australia and the United States, and we face a terrifying prospect, you know, in both countries, and it's a grave worry to me.
Well, that's right. Well, of course, the worldwide mass immigration of Muslims from the Middle East and Africa, including into Australia, is causing a huge problem, because amongst the immigrants and the refugees and asylum seekers, there are people that mean us harm, and we're not to know which ones are the good guys and which ones are the bad guys. Why are Obama and Kerry so blatantly willing to sacrifice Israel over this Iranian deal?
Well, I'm not entirely sure that they think they are sacrificing Israel. I think there is a genuine belief that Israel will be better off. I think it's completely misguided. However, you know, if you read Michael Oren's new book, Ally, you do see this pattern of America's retreat from its alliance with Israel, and not on a strategic level, because on a strategic level, the ties have only strengthened under Obama. In terms of military cooperation and intelligence cooperation, the ties are very strong, and economic, I would say. However, on the diplomatic front, the Obama administration has made a concerted attempt to create what Oren calls daylight between the two countries, between the United States and Israel. And this has been a shift in American policy which has rattled the Israelis, and not only rattled the Israelis, but rattled the moderate Arab regimes in the region, Egypt, Jordan, United Arab Emirates, and Saudi Arabia are all up in arms about this, that America doesn't seem to be operating in its own interests, but has created, essentially, now with this new agreement, which unfortunately I think is going to win congressional approval after Barack Obama applies his presidential veto. It won't pass. It won't get a majority in either house, but it will pass because it's an executive agreement and not an international treaty. But what I want to say is that the Obama administration, or Barack Obama, I think has this idea of balance of power politics necessary for maintaining peace in a region, which is a classic 19th century idea that one power can't grow too much stronger than another, and one power can't threaten another. There has to be a balance. So therefore, he sees Israel as the, or he did see Israel as the regional hegemon, and he is now positioning Iran as a balance to Israel so that neither of them can be belligerent or aggressive towards other nations in the region. It's an absolutely foolish idea, but I think that's what is behind his thinking in creating this distance between the United States and Israel.
I spoke to David Harris from the American Jewish Committee last week. He confirmed to our listeners that the overwhelming majority of American Jews, incredibly, still support Obama and his administration. Is the Democratic DNA too ingrained in American Jews, no matter how America's closest ally in the Middle East is treated, or should I say mistreated?
Well, that's an interesting question, which I've pondered myself for over 30 years. Why are the Jews so liberal, and why do they back administrations whose policies are inimical to their own people? It's a deep puzzle, and in order to answer it, you have to go back, to the 1930s and to the Depression and the support for Franklin D. Roosevelt. But my own view is that the Jews in America have largely swapped out their Judaism for a new religion, which is called liberalism, or more modern incarnation, progressivism, which embraces things that were totally inimical to Judaism, such as abortion, gay rights, and lack of support for the State of Israel, frankly. This is and the absence of God as well. So this is one of the key problems, that the Jews in America who have sort of drifted away from Judaism, and I include in that, I'm sorry to say, some of my co-religionists in the Reform and Conservative movement, and they've embraced progressivism. And it's a disease, I should say, that has also infected the Christian church as well. Catholics and Presbyterians, Methodists and Baptists have adopted exactly the same position and go along with policies which are essentially anti-American in their orientation. And it perplexes me and it distresses me immensely.
We are currently talking to Avi Davis, the president of the American Freedom Alliance. Do you think it's important that Jews establish a closer relationship with the pro-Zionist Christians? After all, they're our only friends.
I don't just think it's crucial. I don't think it's good to do. I think it's crucial. I actually started an organization which is the predecessor of the American Freedom Alliance, called the Israel Christian Nexus in Los Angeles, because I found amongst Christians a greater support for Israel. This was during the Second Intifada. There was a greater support in the Los Angeles community from Christians than there was from Jews. And I thought that had to be encouraged. And I will say that my board of the American Freedom Alliance contains at least 50% Christians who are deep, deep lovers of America and, of course, of Israel. And I'm very proud to call Christians my friends. I think that they are, that practicing Christians at least, know exactly where the dangers lie, both for the United States and Israel in the future. And it's extremely important to cultivate those friendships. There's a lot of anxiety about Christians wanting to convert us, and I always answer that that attack by saying, well, if we educate our children to be Jews, to be practicing Jews, and to respect and love their own culture, they'll never be prey for anybody wishing to convert them. And that's the truth. That is the absolute truth.
I was going to mention that whenever we talk about our Christian supporters, the Jews are always suspicious that why are they supporting us and about. At this stage, I say, well, look, we're happy to have any friends, and I haven't found that we've got many Christian friends and supporters of Israel here, and I haven't found any of them wanting to convert us at all. But I agree, it's very important to have this alliance. Are the progressive Jews in America, sort of led by J Street, still using or urging Obama to stand tough with Israel? And what motivates these anti-Zionist Jews?
Well, they don't call themselves anti-Zionist. They call themselves very pro-Zionist, and now they've launched a massive media campaign to try and convince the rest of the Jewish community that it's exactly what they are. The truth is that they're funded by anti-Zionists and those who would like to see the state of Israel removed. It does appeal to many Jews who are conflicted about their identities as Jews and pro-Israeli supporters. And so they have won a lot of attention. They have a lot of money, I must say. They've been able to raise a great deal of funds for their activities. And they're, of course, cultivated by the White House, who invites them regularly to major events. So they have acquired a great deal of influence in the United States, but are not embraced yet, at least, by the mainstream Jewish community. And which I'm very happy to say, they don't get as much of a platform to speak and to present their points of view. But just to illustrate the divergence, you know, I've been quite shocked at the way the Jewish community has banded together regarding the Iran deal. Here in Los Angeles, the Jewish federations are. Which is similar, I guess, to the Board of Deputies in Melbourne, are up in arms about it and have banded together other Jewish federations and other Jewish institutions around the country to protest the deal and to put pressure on local congressmen to oppose it. And that is quite extraordinary because the federations don't usually take these kind of strong positions on such controversial issues, and particularly one in which their guy, the President of the United States, is a champion. So it's very interesting to me to see how the J Street has gone up against the mainstream Jewish community on this issue and has been more or less isolated because of it.
Yes, I noticed that the AJC have just recently come on board. They're a little bit slow. But it seems all mainstream Jewish communities now, including one of America's most famous Jewish Democrats, Alan Dershowitz, who's been on our program twice, he's very much against the Iranian deal also.
Well, Alan is a true Zionist. I don't like his attitude towards the settlement, but that's a very liberal. That's almost like an emotional thing. It's not a realistic position, but nevertheless, he is a very strong pro-Zionist voice, and he's a realist. He understands the consequences of this deal, and I think he's actually writing a book right now. I mean, maybe he's already written it, attacking it and attacking the deal and taking it apart and making people realize what this means, not just for Israel, but for the United States as well.
Yes, and just finally before we go, what are your thoughts on Pamela Geller? I mention her because she seems to have similar ideals to yourself.
Well, Pamela Geller is a very brave woman, I must say. She puts herself out there. She really doesn't mind being a target. Well, maybe she minds it, but she's willing to become a target. What she did in Texas three months ago, was, I thought, extremely admirable. I didn't think it was provocative at all. I think it was exactly the right thing to do and say, you know, and I was shocked at the amount of conservatives who attacked her. She had every
in particular,
right
to Abe Foxman from the ADL, who's also been on this program, he attacked her also for the...
Well, I don't have much respect for Abe Foxman, I'm sorry to say, and I find his positions to flip-flop all over the place and to be inconsistent. But she's consistent. She really is consistent. I know Pamela Geller, and I think she's a very brave woman, and I give her high marks for bravery. I don't always like her methods, you know, but she's doing what people should be doing, which is speaking their mind and speaking the truth.
Yes.
And that's one of the things that is a problem in our society now, Michael, is that the avoidance of the truth, the willingness to rest on hope rather than on reality, and look things as they really are, not as you want them to be. And this is, we're living in sort of a fantasy world, and if we ever think that Iran's going to change or the Muslim world is suddenly going to change and embrace us, we're barking up the wrong tree.
Yes, I agree 100%. I think political correctness is also another disease. But we've run out of time, Avi, and I'd like to thank you very much for talking to the Jewish community in Australia. And I'll just repeat that the website is AmericanFreedomAlliance.com. Is that correct?
It's AmericanFreedomAlliance.org.
.org.
There you can find, and also, yes, and also people can subscribe to my blog, which is The Intermediate Zone, and I write there almost every day on these kinds of issues, so they can check me out. And I'll just thank you very much, Michael, because as you know, I'm Melbourne born and raised. And,
that's right. You can tell by the accent. And anyway, we thank you once again for speaking to us. And I urge all our listeners to look up the AmericanFreedomAlliance.org. Thank you very much, Avi.
Terrific. I'd happy to come back anytime, Mike.
Okay. Bye.
Bye-bye now.